Thought Leader Thursdays are sponsored by Associated Bank. Whether you're buying, building, or refinancing a home, Associated Bank is dedicated to finding the right mortgage solution for you. Visit associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Don Lloyd is with us, the Senior Vice President of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchange and Derivatives at Associated Bank. Don, welcome back.
Steve, good morning. Thank you for having me back.
Just looking at places to travel maybe for later this summer, the exchange rate between the euro and the dollar is equal now. What does this mean for travel if, let's say, we're planning to go somewhere in the eurozone?
Great time to do it. In fact, I've got about 10% of my staff already over in Europe having a grand time. So, with COVID down a little bit, or at least a little bit more relaxed than it was, say, a year ago, and the exchange rate at parity or very near parity for a dollar against the euro, great time to travel. And, my group's taking, full advantage of it, I'll tell you that.
First time in 20 years that we've been at that parity level, according to the report I saw. Talk to us about the significance of that and why it's happening now.
Sure. Make me feel old. I appreciate it, considering the majority of my group were in junior high school the last time we hit parity. So, it's one of those moments where, they're going to remember it as, where was I when the euro dollar hit parity? And, having been through that before, 20 plus years ago, I certainly remember it. You got to remember, the euro launched November of 1999. That's when the euro launched. It was known as the invisible currency. And what that means is that in 1999, the euro was really only used for accounting bookkeeping purposes and for electronic payments. About 3 years later, euro banknotes and coin currency actually came, the physical side of it came about 3 years later. But right after it launched in 1999, it took less than 12 months to hit parity. It launched about $1.03, right around in there. And within 12 months, it went through parity for the first time. In fact, went through parity, went all the way down to approximately 84 cents per euro. Then started turned around, started to come back up. And 3 years later, in November of 2002, we went back through parity on our way up towards 160 over the next decade or two. So, that's sort of been the trajectory of it. And sure enough, we touched, almost 160 cents per euro. Then it sort of took a U-turn, started to move back down. And, here we are now knocking on parity again, dipped below parity briefly a week or so ago. And now we're just hovering right above it. So fun times. Pop the champagne cork, I guess.
And I think I know the answer to this next question, because inflation is driving everything. But I'm guessing inflation's the reason for this, right?
Yeah. I mean, specifically, what really drives exchange rates, the backbone, if you will, are interest rate differentials. So with the U.S. and the monetary policy that the Fed is implementing to combat inflation and price stability, the Fed has moved first and has moved aggressively on raising interest rates when compared to other countries. So for this example, in the euro dollar, when we take a look at what the ECB, the European Central Bank, has done, they have lagged significantly behind the Fed when it comes to implementing their monetary policy on how they're going to combat inflation. So what you have is interest rate differentials widening or moving in favor of the U.S., and that is the big driver of what's creating a strong U.S. dollar, a weak euro. Now, there's other things that are behind that. The big thing being that the U.S. dollar is the world dominant currency, and what I mean by that is things like gold and oil are priced in euro. So it takes more euros to convert to buy dollars to buy oil if you're over in Europe. So that's another big factor of the demand for the dollar that's going on. So those are the two big drivers right there. But the biggest one is the interest rate differential right now. A few weeks ago, the European Central Bank began to raise their interest rates to combat their concern about inflation. And it was a little bit more of a hike than the market had expected, which is good. But the European Central Bank is still way behind the Federal Reserve when it comes to their concern for inflation and how they're going to address it.
So the magic crystal ball here, if we are planning travel to Europe to take advantage of this, should we do it really soon, or will this be the situation for a while?
Funny enough, I had a couple guys ask me that just this past week. They're doing some personal traveling, going to Paris and whatnot. And, when should I buy my euro? Should I buy it now or should I buy it? Should I wait until just after the new year to buy it? My attitude is take a look at where we were a year or so ago. And the dollar has strengthened against the euro by about 20-25% right in there. We were at $1.25, $1.28 a year ago per euro. Now we're, hovering right above parity. So, to me, it's, what are you going to do? Squeeze an extra couple percent out of it? I mean, that's a 25% move over the past year. Great time to go. Great time to lock into exchange rates right now, as far as I'm concerned. And not only if you're just traveling, but if you're an importer, if you're buying goods and services from overseas, now is a great time to lock in, to forward hedge, to lock in your future purchases of really any currency, not just the euro, but the yen, the Swiss, everything, because the dollar is strong across the board. So if you're an importer and you're buying goods and services denominated in foreign local currency, great time to lock in. We're actually seeing a lot of that. Our customers are going out into the forward market. They are locking in their 2022, 2023 production, and they're taking advantage of this strong dollar right now.
Speaking of the strong dollar, it has kept inflation from spiking even further. Talk to us a little bit about why that's happening.
Yeah, inflation is one of these funny things. You got to remember the Fed's objective is really just twofold. It's full employment and price stability. And the price stability is all about the inflation. That's what they're concerned about. Now, the question is inflation transitory? And will inflation come back down? Or, how much will the Fed tighten? Will they continue to focus on price stability at the cost of pushing us into a recession? So the Fed is really sort of walking a tightrope in here. Now, because we're foreign exchange markets, you always have to look at compared to other countries. So the European Central Bank, Japan, Switzerland, all the other countries that are out there, South America, countries, over in the Pacific Rim, they're all addressing the same thing. They're all looking at inflation, and inflation is all over the place. If you take a look at the U.S., we're running about 9.1% inflation. But our 10-year, if you take a look at 10-year notes, they're lagging way behind it. Our 10-year treasury sit at 2.73% with 9.1% inflation. So keep your fingers crossed that it is transitory, this thing's not going to be permanent. I tend not to think that way at all. I think this is more than transitory. I think the big risk that investors are going to look at is focus everything on the price of oil. And as oil prices start to come down, they're going to say, look, inflation is coming down. It was transitory. Well, there's a lot more behind it than just the price of oil. And, to me, it's all about deficit expansion. And when you are growing the deficit the way we have in the U.S. and you don't have the growth in GDP to match it or to equate it or to keep up with it or to respond to that, then you're going to have inflation. So to me, we have really expanded our deficit side through deficit spending that the government has through all of these, Economic Recovery Act and all this other stuff going on. But GDP is moving the other way. It's declining. And with that, you're going to get inflation, and inflation is going to be here to stay. So in my opinion, this strong dollar is going to be here for quite a while.
So what should we think when we see commodity prices falling? I know the trend has been over the past few weeks, we've seen commodity prices go down. You mentioned oil prices. If those keep going down, though, isn't that good news?
It is good news, but that's just one piece of the pie. Commodity prices are just one piece of the pie. Remember how inflation is measured. The Bureau of Labor Statistics measure it. And they basically take two surveys. They look at the price of goods and services, and they look at the price of housing. And that's what drives the Consumer Price Index, the CPI. The big controversy, though, is the way they define and the way the Bureau of Labor Statistics looks at CPI now. They used to look at a basket of currency, and then they would compare that same basket of currency over an equal time period to say how much have prices and services, goods and services grown compared to now versus the last time we measured it? Well, they changed that, and they don't look at it in a basket of currency. They can now substitute. So what they're really looking at is it used to be based on a cost of goods index, a basket of currencies. It's now based on a cost of living index. So what does that mean? Well, let's say that the basket of goods and services of goods, say, was filet mignon, steak. And let's say they're going to measure that cost or that how much is steak worth today. Well, they can substitute filet mignon for, say, T-bone steaks. Now, they used to not do that. They used to compare filet mignon with filet mignon. Now they can use filet mignon with T-bone steaks. So now they're looking at a cost of living index versus a cost of goods index. What they're able to do is give some flexibility to the way they measure CPI. And actually, I think they're understating CPI. So, you know, we got to be real careful on how we're looking at inflation, how they're measuring these things, and to understand the pitfalls, you know, that are in these measurements that are taken. I'm afraid that we're going to focus on just commodity prices and just oil prices specifically, and we're going to get a very euphoric feeling when oil prices start to drift back down that inflation is under control. I don't think that's going to be the case at all, though.
We still have a strong job market, though. The labor market's still pretty strong. That is part of that figure that you, whether or not we're in a recession or not. I mean, as long as we keep seeing strong job growth, should we still be worried about recession?
Yeah, and isn't that the thing that's making me scratch my head? Is that, you know, we have a very tight labor market now. We're almost running at full employment right now, and we're talking about recession. We're talking about, you know, the inflation that we're seeing and the Fed raising rates and what that's going to be. But yet, there's still this huge demand for employees out there. Now, you're starting to see a little bit of layoffs being announced. I mean, you know, you look at Ford, they announced 8,000 layoffs. Twitter's announcing 30% of its employees. Tesla announced, Meta announced. Peloton announced, you know, all these companies starting to announce layoffs now. Hasn't exactly hit the financial industry yet, the banks, but, you know, they're talking about, you know, the predicament banks could be in by the fourth quarter, at least the big guys, when they say earnings start to crush a little bit. How are they going to address it? Probably through the expense side. When you take a look at the banking industry, there was a lot of hiring going on in 2020. And now the question is, are they going to address any type of expense reduction exercise through letting go of employees or the downsize of employees for 2022, 2023? So, you know, that's a piece you've got to look at. But I'm perplexed with the whole thing of why we have such a tight labor market. It really looks like this economy is polarizing into, you know, two groups, those that, you know, have jobs that are out there and working, and those that are sort of still in this COVID world that they don't really want to go back to work too much, creating this shortage, or the people that have exited the market, older people such as me that really don't want to go back to work. You know, I love it remotely, but do we really want to go back in the office? So you're losing that part of your labor force. So, you know, again, like the markets always do, after 40 plus years in the markets, you know, again, first time I've seen it like this. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Don, great conversation as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Yep, sure. I'm available at the trading desk anytime. They can get a hold of me there if I'm out on the road. My number is 866-524-8836.
All right, Don, we'll see you next time.
Great. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.